Time for some Red Sox talk on a chilly day here in the Northeast. We welcome in our friend Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. Hi there, Sean.
Hello, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Have you gone south yet?
Yes, I've been here since Super Bowl Sunday I arrived.
Oh, you're a lucky man. It's wintry up here. Not a lot of snow, but it's cold. I don't like that anymore.
So I hear. So I hear from my wife repeatedly.
I'll bet. Well, early days of camp so far. No big surprises. No earth-shattering news lately, but a few little things here and there. Nick Pivetta announcing that he's foregoing the World Baseball Classic. I have to guess that is not disappointing to Red Sox management.
Yeah, I would think so, Rich. I mean, you know, they're trying to be supportive of the tournament. This is, excuse me, something that Major League Baseball has a investment in. They think it's a good marketing opportunity for the game internationally. Maybe not so much here. I question how much attention is going to get paid to these games when they start being played on American soil, and the semis and championship game are going to take place in Miami just a couple of hours from here. But it doesn't seem like it's the kind of thing that resonates with a lot of U.S. baseball fans, but it does very well in the Caribbean and very well in Asia, so it's all part of a marketing campaign. But so the Red Sox are supportive of it, but I think there's a distinction between happy to have their position players there, not so happy when it's pitchers, because I think they worry that pitchers are going to be asked to ramp it up a little bit too quickly. You get into the heat of the competition, the adrenaline starts flowing, and before you're ready, you're trying to throw 97 to strike out a guy to get out of a jam, and that could be problematic. So given that Pivetta was struggling a little bit, having experienced COVID not long ago, some difficulty in terms of his stamina and recovery, they thought it was best, and so did he, that he just stay put and focus on getting ready for the regular season.
One of the guys the Red Sox are counting on this season is a young first baseman, Tristan Casas, and you wrote a wonderful piece about him for Boston Sports Journal. Suffice it to say, this is one interesting guy.
Yeah, he's a little different, and I think he's finding out that there's a needle that has to be threaded there a little bit. I think he rankled some people when he came up last year. I think we all remember him sunning himself in right field the morning of his major league debut. That caught a few people off guard. so did his practice of taking pregame naps in the clubhouse about a half hour or 40 minutes before game time. So I think he realizes that he's got to maybe change a little bit of his routine, but he's a guy who does not lack for confidence. I don't think you have to worry about him getting down on himself. He realizes that the 197 batting average that he had in 27 games last September was not exactly indicative of a guy ready to break out, but he did show good knowledge of the strike zone. He also flashed some power occasionally, and you know, the Red Sox think this guy is for real. He's a pretty slick fielding first baseman. He can hit the ball all over the ballpark and occasionally out of it. And, you know, they just want to, they're going to kind of hand him first base and let him go. It doesn't mean he's going to play every single day. I think against some tough lefties, you might see Justin Turner getting some time there and Casas being protected a little bit, at least in the beginning. But they're in with both feet on Tristan Casas.
What have you seen so far? What are your thoughts on what you've seen from big free agent signing Masataka Yoshida?
Yeah, actually, have a story of hit on him up now on our site about getting some lessons about playing the wall down here. And of course, there is a kind of replica of the Green Monster at JetBlue Park. And this morning, Kyle Hudson was out working with him in the outfield, and so were Jim Rice and Dwight Evans. Evans didn't have a whole lot of experience in left field in Fenway. His specialty was right, of course, but Rice played in front of that wall a long time. And Kyle Hudson was working with him on the caroms and the various angles and how shallow and deep to play. And I talked to Matsuzaka through his translator after the workout, and he was talking about some of the things he picked up. So, of course, he's not here to win a gold glove. The Red Sox were intrigued by his offensive ceiling and capability. And they think he's going to get on base a lot, hit doubles all over the place, and probably walk into 20 to 25 home runs. So he's definitely one of the more interesting players here to try to project and get some sense of what he can offer.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Seems like every spring around this time, we hear that this is going to be the year that Alex Verdugo takes his game to the next level. Sounds like he's dropped a little weight coming into camp, but the big responsibility of shifting over to right field and then having to be a key part of this offensive lineup for the team.
Yeah, it's funny. I thought he played a pretty good right field in 2020, his first season with the Red Sox. And then I thought struggled quite a bit last year when he got moved over there in the second half. I thought he did pretty well in left in 21 and the first half of 22. But I think the combination of carrying some extra weight, having a hairline fracture in his toe or on his foot last year probably took away some of that first step quickness and jumps on the ball. So I think he got the message on the final day of last season. Alex Cora called him out a little bit and said they needed more from him. And reading between the lines, Cora kind of suggested that he needed to come into camp in better shape, and he did. He's lighter, and I think he's pretty motivated to have a big year and establish his value. He's got 2 years of control left, and if he's going to turn into the guy that the Dodgers thought he was going to be, Alex Cora keeps using five-tool player. I think that's a stretch. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy to hit a lot of home runs, and frankly, he hasn't stolen a lot of bases. But, to be a solid 290 to 300 hitter, get on base, hit a lot of doubles, which he has, and play some good outfield, he can have a pretty good career doing that. And he seems, as I said, positioned to try and have that big breakout year.
So in the infield, I'm intrigued by what's going on in the middle. It looks like we'll start the season with Christian Arroyo at second, Kike Hernandez at short, and then is the next step whenever Mondesi is able to return, and does he go to short and Kike slide over to second?
No, I think Kike is going to be the starting shortstop until Trevor Story is ready, if Trevor Story is ready. Story is holding out hope that he can be ready after the break, and I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation. But I think Mondesi is going to be kind of the number one option off the bench for both second and short. But I see Arroyo and Kike Hernandez as pretty much the everyday second base and shortstop combination, with Mondesi filling in from here and there in either and also able to contribute in the outfield when needed.
Interesting piece that you wrote about Noah Song, the former prospect who went off to serve in the Navy, went to the Phillies in the Rule 5 draft, and there's still a way he could end up coming back to Boston. What's his current status?
Yeah, he reported to Clearwater with the Phillies today, and he's got a lot of ground to make up in a short period of time. The Phillies don't have to put him on the 40-man roster or the 26-man roster until opening day. But on opening day, he needs to either be on the 26-man roster and stay there for the entire season unless he's on the IL, or else the Phillies have to put him through waivers, and if he goes unclaimed, offer him back to the Red Sox. And I have a hard time believing that a team that won the National League pennant last year and certainly has aspirations to be a World Series contender again this year has room for a guy on its Major League roster. That's the 26-man roster and not just the 40. Mm. Has room on its roster for a guy who, A, hasn't pitched above short season A-ball, and B, hasn't pitched professionally or really at all since, throwing in the Instructional League in October of 2019. I mean, that's a long time ago, or maybe it was 20, I guess, now that, no, it was 19. It's been 3.5 years. And really has not shown that he can get hitters out at high A, never mind at the Major League level, never mind for a team that is expected to contend in the National League East. So I think there's a pretty good likelihood that after taking a look at him for a few weeks, the Phillies are going to make the determination that he's not ready, in which case he could very well end up back at the Red Sox. And if that happens, the Red Sox can simply put him back in the minor leagues. They don't have to put him on the 40. They don't have to put him on the Major League roster. And he can begin a more regular developmental path to the big leagues. The Red Sox like him a lot, think there's a lot to like, but he's had next to no pro ball experience, and to think he could stick with a team that wants to contend is more than a stretch.
If the Red Sox hope to be in any level of contention themselves this year, they've got to get something out of those veteran pitchers trying to come back this year. How do James Paxton and Chris Sale look so far?
So far, so good in that they're healthy, which is something they've not been for much of the last 2 or 3 years. I think I added it up today, and combined over the last 3 years, they have pitched 70 innings at the big league level. So, that's a long time off. Obviously, these guys have a track record of success. And if they're healthy, they could be two pretty significant contributors to that rotation. And so far they are. Sale is going to throw a live BP on Saturday. That'll be a good test. He has so far passed with flying colors on a couple of bullpen sessions, but there's a lot of work to still be done. But at least these guys are without restriction and healthy for a change.
Sean, what's the follow-up been, if any, from your email exchange, your conversation with Red Sox principal owner John Henry?
Well, I don't know if there's any fallout, Rich. I mean, I was picked as one of two outlets for John to answer some questions in an email format, which is obviously not our preference. No chance to follow up or to go back and forth. But that was the format that John chose to communicate in, and so you take what you can get. Mm. He was, as someone said, kind of a mix of defensive and aggressive, hitting back against some narratives that he thought were unfair, not solely by me, but I think in the Boston media in general. He talked about, their philosophy about payroll and free agency, talked a little bit about the economic state of the game and his unhappiness with the CBA, which, is only a year old here, and already there is some movement afoot on the part of some owners, John included, to study some of this competitive balance stuff, which, obviously there are some teams that are not trying to win. The Red Sox aren't one of those, even though they haven't won a lot in the last few years. So it was, it was good to always get his thoughts on how he sees things. We wish he would do it more often, but, that's his choice. So, as I said, we take what we can get.
Did you get the sense that he understood the concern that fans have when they look, and I know you brought it up with him, when they look at Fenway Sports Group and think to themselves, well, they're distracted by all of these other investments and the Red Sox maybe are not their top priority anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think the what angers John the most is the suggestion that this team doesn't spend. And I understand that frustration because it's a narrative that's been advanced by a couple of people and, some jokes about it being Tampa Bay by the Charles. That's clearly not accurate. You know, the Red Sox are already at about $220 million with their payroll, and the Rays have never even gotten $100 million in their history. So comparing the two seems a little specious. But, I think he understands that when a popular player like Xander Bogaerts leaves, or a few years ago a popular player like Mookie Betts is traded because they can't sign him or won't sign him, that fan frustration is going to rear its head, and certainly John has seen that firsthand at the Winter Weekend and also at the Winter Classic at Fenway, where he was not exactly hailed as a conquering hero there. So, if he says he's unaware of fan discontent and anger, then I suspect he's maybe being a little disingenuous.
Well, great work in that challenging situation, getting what you got out of him. And as always, Sean, it's great to talk with you from spring training. We appreciate you making time for us, and we'll catch up with you again before too long.
Sounds good, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Sean McAdam with us, Boston Sports Journal.